These are the words of Liesl Mueller, and it is her poem called Love Like Salt. Love like salt. It lies in our hands, in crystals too intricate to decipher. It goes into the skillet without being given a thought. It spills on the floor so fine, we step all over it. We carry a pinch behind each eyeball. It breaks out on our foreheads. We store it inside our bodies in secret wineskins. At supper, we pass it around the table, talking of holidays by the sea. I invite you into a time of meditation or inward prayer with this poem. For those who are shy but resolute, almonds and milk, and carry a smooth striped stone in your pocket. For those who are first to speak, crisp green apples and wear well-worn hiking boots. For those who refuse to believe even what they see, tart stewed rhubarb. Then greet each living thing you meet by its name. For those whose minds will not empty, a full samovar of tea. Then watch the waves till the tide turns. Then sleep. For those who find the faces of others inscrutable, hot pepper jam. Then sit in the front row at the movies and watch the audience. For those who get lost in their own freedom, slow rising bread. Then write on birch bark all that you believe. For those surprised by their own kneading, grits and molasses, then sit in the sanctuary during every choir practice. For those who are afraid to listen, thick simmering stew, and sit in the park or by the river until among the bird calls, you hear your name. For those who are afraid of what they must do, wild berry pie, and walk everywhere you go. When I was in the credentialing process for the Unitarian Universalist ministry, one of the many things I had to write was an essay about what I considered to be my sacred text. At the time, I chose Mary Oliver's poetry, which I think was probably a frequently chosen text. And of course, this is one way that the credentialing process asked us to wrestle with the reality that Unitarian Universalism believes that revelation is continuous, that the Bible is not finished, that it is not the completed word of the divine, that the sacred is being revealed even now, if we learn to see it. In most religious traditions, of course, probably the one that you were raised in, if you were raised in a more traditional religion, there is a sacred text that is the center of the tradition, and the words that are in the book are the words. Unitarian Universalism is unusual, though not unique, in that we don't organize our religion around a single revealed book or set of writings. Many of the religions that don't have texts in this way are deeply tied to the earth. And so the earth herself takes the place in some ways of a sacred text as the source of wisdom, insight, and guidance. And while we are fairly closely connected to the Protestant tradition, which does have the Bible as its sacred text, we also have a strong line of thinking that is tied to this way of thinking of the earth as the text. The transcendentalists, and Emerson in particular, articulated the possibility that maybe you were just as likely to meet the divine out in the fields as you were sitting in a pew in church. And part of how Emerson came to this conclusion is that he began to read the sacred texts of other religious traditions. And in the 19th century, that was not as readily available as it is now. Now, of course, you can Google multiple translations of all the texts. But for Emerson and the Transcendentalists, this was a world-changing revelation that all kinds of people have a piece of the truth. He, of course, included the wisdom of the Bible in the collection of places that we find wisdom, which is why on this morning we hear some of the biblical text set to music. Emerson and the Transcendentalists, I think, are some of the most important thinkers in Unitarian Universalism for this congregation, because the longer I know you, the more I am convinced that you are neo-transcendentalists. Can that be a thing, Barbara? We've just started a new phase here right now, and you're it. And it's that awareness that the sacred is everywhere, and that getting to sit in silence together and hear the rain fall and hear babies coo is just as important a text as any particular words that have been put down on paper. So since the Unitarian Universalist Association asked me to identify my sacred text as I was stepping into the ministry, I think about it all the time. Is this set of words, or is this part of life, shining enough that I would call it part of our sacred text? So when Laura suggested that we spend a month thinking about food, I thought, is there a way that food is a sacred text? That question may, of course, also reveal to you that I went to poetry school, where you can think of everything as a text. But I think that there is a way that the sacred and the divine is revealed in many things that we don't traditionally think of it as being revealed in. The food that we eat every day comes from ancient plants. And if you eat animals, those animals are also descendants of ancient herds who were bred over thousands of years to be the animals we know today. So everything that we take in gives the past to us. So I thought I would just observe this in three very simple foods. The word bread stands in for food in general in many languages. And in our language, the word bread also stands in for money sometimes. So bread is a powerful substance. And it appears that people have been cooking some form of bread since just about the time that people began cultivating grains, which seems to be about 10,000 years ago, give or take a millennia. And it looks like something happened in the world, in several different parts of the world, at about the same time. again, give or take 40 generations or so, people in the Pearl River Valley in China started cultivating a plant that is the ancestor of all the rice that we eat today. And at about the same time, people in what is now southeastern Turkey started to cultivate a grass that has come to be wheat. Whatever your relationship is with gluten these days, these grains... This is another way to see that our relationships to the sacred text that we inherit get complicated. So whatever your relationship is to gluten, these grains that were tended by our ancestors have shaped everything about civilization. They shaped who we are, how we understand ourselves, and they shaped the earth that we walk around on. So to wheat and rice, I add one more element of salt. It was just a little while after humans began to cultivate grains that there's evidence that people began to harvest salt from the earth. There are places where you can find salt, but people also figured out that you could boil water and or evaporate water and get salt and other minerals out of it. And for many years, salt was so precious that salt and gold were considered to be of equal value. And people pressed salt into little cakes and coins and used it as a way to buy things. It wouldn't work anymore. Now, of course, we have so much salt that it's harmful to us. So, just like gluten, while we have a sometimes troubled relationship with it in this moment, it is essential for life. In addition to using it as trading coins, our ancestors built roads specifically for transporting salt, so that people everywhere would have enough of it. And while we love salty potato chips and French fries and these pre-made meals that we get now that are so laden with salt that it's problematic, rice and wheat and salt in their simple elemental states remind us of the deepest quiet story of life that is always coming into being on this planet. These three foods tell us the story of who we are and how we got here. Most of the religious traditions in the world use these three elements as part of their offering to the gods or part of their rituals for human life. From wedding ceremonies to house blessings to funerals. In many traditions in the Middle East, you dip bread in salt as part of, well, as part of multiple rituals. And if you've ever seen a Buddhist shrine to the ancestors, you've seen oranges piled up, but there's almost always a little bit of rice with salt on it, too. In many cultures, you put salt into a grave before you bury someone. It's part of a blessing to them and making sure that they are with the good spirits and not the bad spirits. Salt is a protector, seen as a protector in many traditions. Whether or not the element of salt does in fact protect people, it's clear that we humans have perceived it as being on the side of the good forces for thousands of years. And we only know each other because of wheat and rice and salt. These cities that sprang up in the world only could come into being because of rice and wheat offering people enough food energy that they could live close together. And salt is also essential for us being able to live close enough together that we can have towns and cities and travel and have what we have today. We know about salt mostly because of what it does to our blood pressure, but our nervous system would just fail to work if we didn't have salt. So our ability to be creative and inventive, to remember each other, and to build things together depends on salt. In the poem by Liesl Mueller, the speaker reminds us that the simplest things are so powerful that we forget to see them in our lives. Maybe we can't see the way our lives are shaped by our ancestors. Maybe we can't see that our ancestors' faces are in our faces, that they are laughing with us, raising their eyebrows with us, maybe tilting their head to the side in a funny way with us. It is in these subtle patterns that the sacred is always revealed. If we can just slow ourselves down enough, adjust our eyes to perceive that pattern. Maybe it's adjusting our ears to listen. The Unitarian Universalist tradition has called us out of the confines of a single text. It has taken years and years to find our way through that process. Emerson began it in the 19th century, and it was the humanists in the early 20th century who really confirmed that we would find a way to express our wonder in this world without a single text. And so it is our calling, all Unitarian Universalists, to look out into the world and to think all the time, what here shines brightly enough that it feeds our souls and is part of the sacred text of living.